Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. As South Dakota Governor Dennis Dugard prepares to give his final State of the State address, state lawmakers also set their intentions for the upcoming session. State Senator Neil Tapio of District 5 says one topic worthy of review, in his opinion, is the role of state immigration and refugee resettlement programs. He is calling for the formation of a legislative working group on the issue. He joins us now from Pier with more. Senator Tapio, welcome to In the Moment.
Hey, good morning, Lori.
How are things looking in Pier today, sir?
Oh, it's a beautiful day. We don't have to have our galoshes on, and it's above 30 degrees, so it's all good.
What's it like to come back together, you know, with fellow lawmakers this time every year?
Well, it's a reacquaintance of friends, new and old, and, you know, in South Dakota, you know, generally it's a small state, so you know almost everybody, and you've known them for 10, 15, 20 years of your life. So it's good that way. And then, you know, just getting down to the people's business and, you know, just as a business owner, setting aside your what you've been working on and trying to lock out 2 or 2.5 months of time is a sacrifice, but it's worthwhile to make sure that we have citizen government that works for everybody.
Let's talk about some of that, to getting down to business, because you've called for a legislative working group. And I'm wondering if you could explain to us what that exactly is. What is a legislative working group in this context?
Well, one of the things that you find out in the legislature is there's not a really an opportunity to do a deep dive into specific issues. If you've spent any time in the legislature, generally the process is that you come up with a bill. You introduce the bill into a committee. You have a hearing that lasts maybe 5, 10, 15 minutes. It goes to the floor. You get a vote of maybe with a discussion of an hour. And that's really the in-depth understanding that a typical legislator has on an issue. Now, many of these issues come up year after year, so there's a growing knowledge of particular topics. Within the last 5 years, there's been a really influx in the number of refugees that we've been bringing to the state. And the question is how much, in particular Aberdeen, South Dakota, it's a town of 20 to 25,000 people. Their population between immigrants and refugee population has grown somewhere probably between 2%, and now it's approaching 10 to 15%. So the question is, how fast can you assimilate people into a community without changing the basic fabric of the community? I was the state director for the Trump campaign, and I've received these phone calls from, you know, grandmothers and great-grandmothers concerned about the crime rate, and they were trying to get information of how many more crime, what the crime statistics were. And it was really difficult to get that. And so I started talking to the chief of police, different folks, and there's almost like an embargo on information to what this is actually costing communities. So this is an attempt to be able to have a formal process to get that information so that the legislators can make a good informed decision on really the numbers of refugees that we have. Obviously, we welcome people into our states, and then kind of just to make sure that we protect our communities and represent the people that that live within the communities and try to keep them as safe as possible.
So there's a few things I want to ask you here, and one is it an official legislative working group? Who funds that group? Is that part of the state budget? How do you make it? How do you make it official?
It's very similar. Have you been to Pier much? Are you familiar with how Pier works?
I'm sure you're more familiar than I am. I'm somewhat familiar with Pier. Yes.
So there's quite a few just working groups where legislators get together and meet. There's a couple of lunch caucuses that people get, and they go over specific issues and they try to do a deep dive on the issues. Now there's a formal process of requesting. You know, if there's an overnight visit, there's a formal process that you can request money, but I anticipate that most of this work will be just done as a part of our official duties that doesn't cost the state anything extra. It's an opportunity to meet as a formal group, to be able to have an agenda, to be able to talk about exactly the issues that need to be talked about, and then to be able to possibly bring in expert witnesses to be able to share with legislators as a way of information gathering. And I think that the people in your audience understand that it's really important before you make any decision that you want to make informed decisions.
So what I'm wondering is it like a regular committee meeting? Are the you know, the minutes public? Is it broadcast on SDPB or on South Dakota Net? You know, is there transparency for the working group somehow?
Well, our goal is to be extraordinarily transparent. One of the problems, obviously, you know, if you've been covering PEER, is that there is no open government, and it's very not untransparent. So our goal is to be able to have as much information to the public as possible, issuing reports, issuing formal requests for information, and we'll do as much as we can formally. Obviously, if we have two legislators that have in communications, you know, one-to-one, it's not something that is public. However, I believe that when we meet, that all people should be open to that process.
Is this the folks who are coming to this research group, have they already been determined? How are they being selected?
I'm open to having as many people as possible that are interested in this subject to be participating in this. I would like it to be bipartisan, and I would like it to be as large as possible. You know, we have a challenge in our state. We actually don't talk to each other very often. A lot of times we talk past each other. So one person comes and they maybe watch CNN News and they have one perspective, and maybe another person watches Fox News and they have another perspective. What I do for a living is to try to bridge those people together. So to have a honest dialogue with people, I believe in completely open and transparent government. That's the only way you can have good decisions. And, you know, just even by the tone of your questions, I see that you're kind of going after, you know, the integrity of this commission, or maybe diving more into it. I welcome that. I want to sit down with as many people as possible and have a long dialogue. Give you an example. I was just down in the Black Hills, and I spoke with a leader on the Indian reservation, and we were talking about really difficult, pressing issues. I've been really concerned about the Star Academy, or the sale of the Star Academy, in particular, because there's a gaping hole in the juvenile justice system that everybody I've talked to, superintendents, I've talked to a dozen superintendents, state's attorneys, as well as sheriffs, and they all say there's no teeth in the system, that people get a slap in the hand and they put back right into the same position. What we need is to have some place where there's a troubled environment or a troubled behavior pattern, to be able to pluck those people out and put them into somewhere else, to get them away from the schools and the educators. They're not there to be criminal justice people. They're there to educate our kids in the safest environment possible. So I was talking to this fellow that was from the Rosebud, and he was talking about how difficult times are in the reservation. The children are having problems. You know, there's molestation, incest. There's, you know, people are becoming sexually active at an extraordinarily young age. There's a drug abuse problem. And just in passing, he said that just last weekend there were 3 suicides on the reservations. And then he kept on going, and I said, stop. You didn't even blink your eyes differently. Your eyes, your pupils didn't even dilate when you said that 3 kids committed suicide last weekend on the reservation. That should startle everybody, that it doesn't even matter anymore, it matters, but it doesn't even alarm people anymore. We have to declare a state of emergency and say, we're not going to tolerate this stuff. And the only way you can really dive into something is if you're completely honest. If you actually go and say, what is the root cause of the problem? And when you dive into it in that deep of a level, I guarantee you're going to get different promises or different solutions than if you just look at it at surface level. To bring this all into one, when I spoke with Governor Dugard's staff about juvenile justice, and then he put out a report that says everything isn't on track on the juvenile justice program, the facts belie that statement. everybody within the juvenile justice program, from superintendents, educators, to parents that are sending their kids to education, to defense attorneys, public defenders, they all say that there's a problem within juvenile justice and nobody is addressing it. My
Senator
job
Tapio,
as a legislator...
I hate to interrupt you here, but I'm afraid that we'll run out our time and maybe not address some of the other questions here. I did talk with Doug Barthel and Tim Goodwin about the Star Academy, and I believe Tim Goodwin was with the group that really feels that Star Academy should still exist. Doug Barthel was saying, yes, there are still some problems, but we aren't going to go backwards to having a large, state-funded place like Star Academy. Christy Bunkers with the Department of Corrections for the state of South Dakota said the same thing, that they, were working on that some tweaks had been made in 2017 and things were going in a certain direction. Do you feel like that's just not the full picture? And then let's sort of maybe wrap up the juvenile corrections conversation and head back to immigration and refugee resettlement, if we could.
Sure. So Doug, I'm not familiar with Doug. He was just recently appointed. I believe he was a police officer and or a police chief.
He was
chief
the chief of, chief of police of chief Sioux Falls, and he was part of the whole efforts, the working groups, and to work on the the changes that were rolled out across the state. So he has a deep knowledge of this of the topic.
He does, and he's an interested party in the outcome. One of the things that when you pour your heart and the soul into something, you become very invested, and sometimes you put blinders on, and you sometimes fail to see just the real issues that are hitting you in the face. At the GOAC hearing, the Oversight Committee, there was a briefing by the governor's person that was heading up this commission. And when I brought to his attention that there were a bunch of people that were opposed to it, it was news to him. A lot of times, if you don't ask questions, you really don't know the real problems. So I look at this as an opportunity to educate people, and we have to have a dialogue. I look forward to sitting down with Doug or anybody else that is willing to talk about this issue. It is a pressing issue. We disagree on that, but only when you have a dialogue, an honest a dialogue where you actually sit down with people, can you actually come together to solve some problems. So I look forward to talking to him about that.
Let's go back to refugee resettlement. And you said at the beginning of our conversation that the numbers were going up over the past 5 years. And I'm looking at Lutheran Social Services annual report for December 2017. It was released, and it's showing 5 years of decreased numbers, including a low for fiscal year 2017 of 316 refugee placement in the state. Are we looking at different numbers, or how can we expand that conversation?
So you have to look at three parts to migration refugee issues. So there's right now, Sioux Falls is a direct resettlement site. Lutheran Social Services works with the United Nations Refugee Center through the State Department, and they bring in refugees. So the numbers that you're quoting is the number of refugees there. Okay, once a person is placed, then there are actions to be able to bring their family members here as well. Those numbers don't reflect the number of people that they bring in outside of the direct resettlement, but what's called chain migration. And then there's a lottery system that the U.S. government has that just randomly picks people, really without vetting or anything, and brings people in. So your numbers really reflect simply just one portion of it. That's not even counting the amount of secondary migration. So once people are brought here, they don't have to stay in Sioux Falls. They can go anywhere. So in a city like Aberdeen, they're not a direct resettlement site, but what there is a secondary migration. And so the packing plant is recruiting workers that they're paying $9 to $10 an hour for. just 20 years ago, packing plants, their average salaries were paying $19 to $25 an hour. So, when you took away the unions of these plants, they absolutely destroyed the pay structure. And I'm sure that your listeners are completely frustrated by the fact that you can't pay people enough to actually be self-reliant. So what happens is you bring these workers into these plants in Aberdeen, and they still qualify for Medicaid if they don't reach the level of poverty, which is right now 134% of the poverty level, so $40,000 possibly in South Dakota, then they go on the welfare system. And then there's a lot of issues with that. But your numbers don't tell the whole story. And that's the difficult part about just talking points and statistics, is that there's really generally more to the story.
Right. How long would someone stay on a welfare system, be it from a generational standpoint, if someone needed help getting settled as they came to a new country? Do you have an idea of, once they've been here a while, getting off those programs the next generation?
We just don't have that information, Lori. And so that's really part of the gathering of information to find out exactly, just even that last statement that I said, that's just from research that I've done myself, is to try to understand the pay structure versus how many, what kind of costs it has to the state or the federal government. Trying to piece that all together so that we can actually have an informed decision without an agenda is an important thing for our state. You know, I don't know where you got your statistics, but I would imagine, I mean, did you get those from Lutheran Social Services?
It's the Lutheran Social Services annual report. I found them online.
Yep. So Lutheran Social Services has an agenda, right? So their agenda, when you look at it, all things are related to money. And so they have an agenda to keep the process going. That's why they say that the refugee vetting system is okay. If you don't know exactly how people are vetting or being vetted, you really shouldn't say that the vetting system is working properly. If you have zero information on how people are vetted, then you really shouldn't put your reputation of your organization on the line to say that the vetting system is keeping the people of South Dakota safe. So they already have a credibility issue. But their agenda is, follow the money. How much are they getting paid? How much are the leaders of the organization getting paid? And then, and it's not just on the direct resettlement, but they get paid interpretive services and counseling services. And it becomes a business making money off of these refugees. And so we're just going to try to understand that. And I hope that your listeners understand that I don't do this out of any animosity towards refugees. As a matter of fact, I've spent at least probably 15 days in Aberdeen within the last year. I've talked to Karen refugees, and they're the most wonderful people. They have the most wonderful stories you've ever seen. I've talked to people that are from the Mexican community that work at the packing plant. Wonderful people. I've even talked to some Somalis, and they say that they're coming here to escape just a tragedy going over in Somalia. We are a very compassionate state. We're a very compassionate community. But the moment the people associated with Lutheran Social Services and the group that they formed, when they call the people in opposition extremists and haters and Islamophobes, and you characterize them as this, it causes a problem. You no longer can have an honest dialogue between two people. It really stifles.
To be fair, Senator Tapio, I'm really not seeing that in their report at all. I'm not seeing them call. I mean, to be fair, I'm looking at their annual report, and this will be part of that they gave last year. You know, and for listeners who are just tuning in, you know, this is obviously a big conversation in the state of South Dakota. We'll run out of time here before we can even scratch the surface. And Senator Tapio, I hope you'll come back and talk to us in the future.
I would absolutely be happy to, Lori.
I want to touch very quickly on workforce development, though, because we recently did a story with a Washington Post reporter who had come and seen the turkey plant, Dakota Provisions in Huron, and just the really fine work that's being done to, you know, bring refugees, immigrants, new people. They were going to Puerto Rico and bringing people back to recruit. So, you know, when we talk a lot on this program about workforce development, that's tied very deeply into immigration What are your thoughts on these towns who are bringing people in and saying, this is the next generation of workers in South Dakota? These people settle here, their children stay, and we build a richer community. What are your thoughts there?
Well, I would suggest that there's many, many different parts to this issue. I don't know if your listeners have ever toured the south part of Chicago. There's 2.5 million people on welfare benefits in the south side of Chicago. Many of them are on their third generation. I would suggest that we would recruit those folks to come to South Dakota. There's a lot of people. There's 43 million people on welfare benefits in the country. There's a large number of people that are needing work. One of the problems is that these packing plants are controlled. They're generally, there's a monopoly. There's a conglomeration of these packing plants, and their goal is to suppress wages down to a point where you can't have a livable wage. I think that's a problem. And when you're paying $9 or $10 an hour and you're bringing in cheap labor, it's almost a form of slavery. there's a lot of people that are willing to work. For instance, in Watertown, I was at the vocational or the technical institute annual meeting with legislators, and they were talking about the workforce development, that they can't find workers in these manufacturing facilities. Okay. And so I started asking a few questions, and they said, yeah, we have to advertise outside of the city. The truth is that as you start talking to the superintendents, you start talking to the people that are within the communities, they'll say that up to 50% of the children are somewhat habitual users of marijuana, meaning one or two times a month.
Are we in Chicago?
Companies,
are you, I'm
no,
sorry.
No, in still, Watertown, in Rapid
Watertown.
City.
Hmm.
You ask the people how many kids are on drugs or taking drugs. These companies, these manufacturing companies, have a drug test to be able to work in their operations, which means that almost half of the people that graduated from high school are not qualified to work in their facilities. Now, expand that just a little bit further.
I'm going to have to cut you off, Senator Tapio. I hate to do that. We are running short on time, and you're in Pierre now. The governor's giving his State of the State address. You recently called for his resignation because of the immigration issue. You didn't feel he was taking that seriously. I'm wondering if you are concerned about losing credibility with people by saying that Governor Dugard should resign over something like a difference of opinion.
I don't know. Did that not come across as a sense of humor, or was that?
Oh, it was
serious,
a joke.
Do you think
it did come?
Do you
across
know
as serious
the,
to
I
me?
Was the camp, I was the state director for the Trump campaign in South right. Dakota. 3 weeks before the election, he asked President Trump to step down and have Mike Pence as the to fill in his shoes. Basically, he was saying that we should have Hillary Clinton as president. When the battle was the most difficult, he laid his gun down and
so
said
you
that
were
he
joking?
Didn't want to fight.
Just to be clear, I just want to be fair. Were you joking?
The reference was to the fact that he tweeted out 3 weeks before the election that Trump should step down. I mean, that is funny stuff, I would think. Wouldn't you find that somewhat hilarious? Or are you aware that he tweeted that out?
I'm going to have to let you go, Senator Tapio. We'll talk to you next time.
All right. Well, anytime. I'm always willing to talk, and my goal is to be as open and transparent as possible, Lori.